Welcome, Dr. James Beckett, Sports Card Insights, another listener question episode. Just got a big stack here, and I think I'll just cut through them. None of them, I think, are worthy of having a full 15-minute episode, but they might be worth 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, but I'm trying to provide sports card insights through it all. Some of these things, like I said, they're just interesting questions or comments that were made to me over the past while. So thanks, sponsors, Topps Panini, Upper Deck, Heritage Auctions, Hunkin' Scott Auctions, Mike Stadium Sports Cards, Burbank Sports Cards, ComC.com, and Beckett Media, Beckett Grading, Beckett Authentication. Again, these are very eclectic. They're very different. And some of them are from a couple months ago, and some are for a few days ago. I just throw them in the stack and in no particular order. The first one from David talking about rookie cards, and really it's evolved, David. He wants to know, is the importance of something being pack pulled, is it about the pack, or is it about the fact that the set was distributed nationally and was widely available? That was all the same thing in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and early 90s, for the most part. There were some box sets, which again put them into the XRC category at that time. Anyway, his point is, what about these National Treasures $10,000 briefcase packaging or distribution of cards, high-end RPAs and patch autographs? Is it fair? They're rookie cards when they're only available to the one percenters in the hobby. First of all, David, they're available to anybody that gets in a break in some cases. And you could borrow money, or you could save up, sell all your cards to try to get one. That's not the way I collect. But the hobby determines. Back in the day, I think when the magazine had maximum distribution, certainly in the 80s and 90s, we established a definition of rookie cards. The card companies and the leagues wanted a broader definition. So that has happened. And most collectors want the card that they have to be a rookie card. The other end of the spectrum, David, is that the one percenters shouldn't be penalized. They do go to the same shows. They may spend more money, but they're in the hobby too, and they shouldn't be penalized for having more money, if you can imagine that. And in most cases, David, back in the day when there was one rookie card, now there's so many rookie cards. The best rookie cards are very expensive. And in many cases, they're autographed or very low serial number or in very expensive products. So thanks for your question. Next is from Bobby, talking entrepreneurial, wanted to set up a trading app for TCGs, for collectible card games. Was wondering if my old company could provide a service to his perhaps new company to get cards verified. There's a trading app. So these TCG players could trade with each other all over the world, and they could get the cards they need by trading off the ones they don't need. It sounds great, but he says the problem he's run into is the authentication of the cards. Bobby, it's not a big problem if you're staying on the low end without a lot of value. If you're talking about cards not worth counterfeiting, not worth faking or altering, if they're lower level cards, then that will work. But otherwise, it's an expensive card. Would you want Beckett or some intermediary to hold the cards on both ends until they're both checked out? It's adding a lot of friction and a lot of expense to it. I think my whole company, we were always interested in great ideas. This idea, I think people are doing their own trading through these other platforms. All the services that have come out for assisting with trading are all geared for higher level, more expensive trades where you could get burned. It'd be a very superficial burn if you had your commons traded across the world. In fact, postage is the problem. Anyway, thanks for your comment. I had an idea that was related to that that I pitched with BGS, and they're probably still contemplating it because I haven't had any response there. From Stooks, he said he wanted to see a Buc-ee's card set. When you drive down the interstate in Texas, you don't go too far without seeing a Buc-ee's. So they're a huge thing. I like to see a Buc-ee's card set too. There's a lot of traffic there. It's a franchise, or maybe they're all company owned, but they're strategically located. Man, a lot of cards are driving by. And if they had cards there, maybe they'd be regional. Maybe they'd have Rangers in Texas and things like that. My first card I ever bought was on a driving trip. And so why not? So Stooks, I'm with you. I don't think Buc-ee's is national, but if they had a Buc-ee's brand or Buc-ee's packaging, we'll see. But to keep kids busy in the car, if it's a lower end thing and mom and dad are driving and the kid's in the back seat, get some cards and opening them up, and I got a handful. The other thing Stu says, he's really only buying new product at Walmart, but he's only doing that when he's already there. Like I said, I try to consolidate trips. I don't try to make a special trip unless it's really worth it. So he's already going to get groceries, and he says he'll buy discounted blaster boxes. Last time I looked at the Walmart, it wasn't clear what was discounted. It was like you had to take it to the register to find out what the price was. And I don't like that. That's like walking up to a show table and not having any prices marked. Then another one from my Half-Life episode that I had with Brian Gray that was enjoyable. But Noonzy83 is talking about Fanatics being really smart. He's thinking they're on the right track. They're listening to collectors. He said it's really improving the disconnect that's been in the hobby between manufacturers and their customers. The episode that you're commenting on is the Half-Life, and there is no Half-Life when Michael Rubin is still around with his particular imprint. In contrast, Brian is no longer at Leaf. I am no longer at Beckett. But I expect that as Michael Rubin imposes his discipline and savvy in terms of growing this thing 10x, he's all about, I think, the customer experience. And trying to make money and connecting and partnering with other entities that produce good stuff. But I can assure you all the card manufacturers that I've known over the years, they're listening. Just because somebody's listening doesn't mean they do exactly what you said, but they are listening. In fact, many of them that I know are collectors, were collectors and still are collectors. And so they're not disconnected. It's just that what I think always comes across is that in my buddies that go to work for the card companies, the scale is so huge. There's so many sets. There's so many cards. There's so many customers. There's so many dealers that the disconnect is the difficulty of communicating things when there's different types of customers that are looking for different types of things. Next from Phil. Phil's had several questions, but he mentioned buying some cards at the Dallas Card Show from a former employee, and he said he thought his name was Mark. I'm sure it's Mark Anderson. He mentioned that he was not in good health and that he loved to haggle. He absolutely loved to haggle. And I just remembered that he was the last one to leave the show. And it wasn't because he was infirm. It's just because he loved it so much. This was his element. And so Kyle would have to come around and say, Mark, close it up here, or we closed up an hour ago. You need to finish up this deal. But he loved to negotiate. Now, he was not the founder of grading. He didn't start it as much as he got in there very early and was clearly identified as somebody that was a go-to guy. I'm sure he helped systematize it. And he really was the first dedicated full-time director of grading. Just a great guy, certainly missed by all who knew him. But also Phil talked about getting a Frank Robinson PSA 1 that he thinks is fabulous because it had a pinhole. He said, but for the pinhole or a needle hole, whatever it was, that you could barely see, it would have been a 9. And so, again, that's to my point of thumbtacks or a pinhole. So, anyway, it was Mark. Phil, he's a great guy. He certainly missed. Next from Dact T Mac fan, maybe. Hard to know. Talking about the card wall, mentioned he liked the videos, but he would like to have a way to filter those out on YouTube. And the only way I can see is that you could filter them out by either they look differently because the audio podcasts just have the podcast art. And so I don't know that you can filter them. I've been working with my web design group for the podcast webpage to be able to do that. I've asked them for that and they don't have that yet. Finally, he talks about the fact that he thinks it's an issue. It actually is an issue that the flip, the label on BGS cards sometimes slide or shift. And it's just frustrating that it's slotted in there, but if it gets knocked in a certain way, sometimes it slides down a little bit. It doesn't come all the way out, obviously, because it's hermetically sealed, but it'll be there. He said the person, when he bought it and he got it and he complained to the eBay seller, told him to pound it on the floor to get it to ship back into place. Please don't pound it on the floor. But you can generally tap, whether it's down or to the right or to the left, and you just gently bump it back in there. He says it's a big flaw. My sense is from manufacturing stuff and my experience is that it's just based on tolerances. There's a cavity. I mean, the two sides come together. There's a space for the label and it's not paper thin. It's got to be bigger than the paper. So it's not bulging, but if the tolerances are too loose, then it can shift. And I've had several of those. In fact, I have some on my wall that if I look up and I think, oh, that's sliding down a little bit. And I suppose you could try to get it reholdered, but it does just go right back. Now, my sports card insight might be that I'm not sure that same problem occurs as much with the metallic flips. On the paper flips, they may be a little bit thin, certainly the gold metallics that is like metal that goes in for the 9.5s and the 10s and not the black 10s. So they're actually thicker. So that may be part of the problem. And I'd just like to apologize. I'm not in charge anymore, but it's just a nuisance. Next, same guy, Dak T-Mac fan. Actually, this is horrible to say, but I'm probably more of a T-Mac fan than I am a Dak fan at this point. T-Mac also didn't, I think, win any championships. And Dak's been entertaining too, but T-Mac was awesome. But he's a fan of Carmelo Anthony. He says he's really looking forward to seeing which Carmelo Anthony ends up on the wall. But that's the dilemma. I just do one per player. And so Carmelo at Syracuse, it was a fabulous season, and he's going to be on there. But I think when I was at the A's a few years ago, my better Carmelo Anthony was pending grading. When I'll go back through, I'll pick one out. So hope you like it. Toronto show was last weekend, and I'm really sad I didn't go. I love going there. When I used to go, I would buy type cards, mainly for the books, for the almanacs and things. A lot of hockey, but some Canadian baseball, other CFL, things like that. So when I did, I wasn't really completely anonymous, but it's just awkward. I don't walk up and say, hey, this is who I am. I'm buying these cards to catalog them. Give me a good deal. I just say, how much are they? And if I pay cash, I don't want the implication that I'm expecting some special treatment. I'm just a customer there. Consequently, in those days when I would buy at the Toronto Sports Expo, I didn't really have very many bill of sales, because that would be from the dealer to me, the name. Sometimes they'd want to know who you are. So there was very little of that. And a lot of the cards were different prices. So they could be cheaper. They could be a little bit more expensive. I wouldn't buy anything super expensive, but I could have a $1 card and a $100 card, but they're just cards. My point is, when you get to customs, they just see a box of cards. In most cases, I would leave the price stickers on there because I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm going to be disclosing. And so you have a certain level, I think it's maybe $600 then, it might be $800 now, that you can bring across without duty or paying customs. Actually, one time I got pulled aside and I paid extra a few times, but I think the duty is not a huge amount. But one time I got pulled aside, and I had all these cards and put in a room. And I sat in there for a long time. And I may have told this story. And then the guy came in and said, hey, because they had my passport, they had all this stuff, said, oh, we were looking for a baseball, so we get you to sign it because we're big fans. This was back in the heyday. This was back when Beckett hockey was going super strong. But nowadays, if I went next time and I bought $800 worth of dollar box cards, let's say, so I bought $800 box cards for a dollar. And I try to go through customs and I say, I've got $800, which happens to be the limit. And so I want to get them through. If the guy's a collector, he looks at him, he says, wait a minute, you say they're dollar cards, but I think they're $5 cards. Because when I'm looking in the dollar box, I'm trying to pick out better cards. And so they may be nominally worth $5. Or he says, hey, you had to pay more than a dollar for these. I'm saying, no, I picked out the best ones in the dollar box. So the guy's going to say, I'm not buying. If they said they won't buy it, what would happen to me? And so I was just role playing this with myself and realizing I'm standing there trying to get through to make my flight. If he says they're $5 cards, I've got 800. And I truthfully have said I paid 800 for them, but I might not have a receipt or bill of sale. So he says they're worth $4,000. Therefore, I'm going to owe the difference between 800 that I can get through and the 4,000 he says they're worth. And again, assuming they're all Canadian, they're not US produced, all that loophole. So I've got $3,200 over the limit. If that's a 3% duty, that's a little bit less than $100. So basically, the worst thing that would happen. So now I'm talking myself into going to Toronto, realizing that I think I could go have some fun at the dollar box up there. Again, they'd be hockey dollar boxes, which you don't see down here very much. So thanks, everybody. Another interesting episode of Multiple Questions. Thanks for your questions. Keep them coming. And I'll be back in a couple days.